Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, today we return to a most troubling condition that impacts so many of us, especially as we grow older, and that's chronic pain. And roughly 100 million Americans, close to one-third of the U.S. population, suffer from some form of chronic pain. And if you are a loved one among those 100 million chronic pain sufferers, I'm certain you're desperate for a solution. And if you've gone to your doctor, what has he or she prescribed? In so many cases, the answer probably was prescription opiates. And over the past decade, powerful opiates, formerly reserved for cancer patients, have been routinely prescribed for all kinds of chronic pain. And the number of opiate prescriptions for drugs like Vicodin, Percocet, and Oxycontin, and if I don't pronounce them right, forgive me, I'm not an expert on that, that's increased by 400%, making them the most prescribed class of drugs in the United States. And unfortunately, in so many cases, opiates are not the answer. Some produce terrible side effects, and when overdose can kill you. A lot of you probably heard about Prince, the entertainer that now they think may have been linked to opiate overdoses. And more than 40 deaths occur every day in the U.S. from prescription opiate overdoses. To date, more Americans have died from prescription drug overdoses than died in the Vietnam War. And every year, more Americans die from those overdoses than from traffic accidents. And opiate overdoses constitute a growing national emergency, and the feds are taking action. The Centers for Disease Control has issued new CDC guidelines to severely limit prescriptions for opiate drugs. And just this month, Congress passed several bills to combat our country's growing painkiller abuse. And the centerpiece bill passed the House by 413-5. Not much consensus in politics these days, but there certainly was on that. And so the bottom line, if you or a loved one presently rely on opiates to combat chronic pain, you may soon be faced with early withdrawal and the fear of living with intolerable pain. And chronic pain inflicts more Americans than heart disease, cancer, and diabetes combined. But today I have some great news. My guest, pain medication expert Beth Darnell, Ph.D., is here to tell us that there is an answer to chronic pain, but it's not in a bottle. And when we as pain sufferers learn to control our thoughts, emotions, and responses to pain, we can effectively self-manage our pain with fewer or no painkillers. And furthermore, by drastically reducing, perhaps even eliminating, highly addictive opiate medications, we can prevent changes to our brain and our body chemistry in ways that actually can lead to more pain. And Beth Darnell, Ph.D., is a clinical associate professor in the Division of Pain Medicine at Stanford University. As a pain psychologist, she has 15 years' experience treating adults with chronic pain. And as a young lady, she lived through her own chronic pain experience, and she's author of the acclaimed book, Avoid the Dangers of Prescription Opiates and Gain Control Over Chronic Pain. Hello, Beth, and welcome. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
Roy, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's begin with the basics. Give us, as you put it, a full definition of pain. What is pain, and what must we do to manage it?
Yeah, so most people are surprised to learn about the actual definition of pain. It's not just the hurt that you feel in your body. Pain is defined as a negative sensory and emotional experience, So what that means is that psychology is actually built into the definition of pain. But in the United States, we tend to focus on treating only half of the definition of pain. We want to kill that sensation. And if we turn our attention attention and focus on this other half of the definition of pain, we can treat pain effectively and reduce our reliance on medications to treat it.
I see. Well, opiates are commonly referred to as painkillers, but you indicate this word is a misnomer. Why, in fact, should we not refer to an opiate medication as a painkiller?
It sure is, and it really is a trap to think of opioids as painkillers because they do not eradicate pain. They do not solve pain. The research shows that they reduce pain in the long run. They reduce pain by about 25 to 30% on average, and for some people, far less than that. And when you talk to people, they'll say, yeah, you know, they take the edge off. And
they're really kind of masking the pain rather than killing the pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And to a very small degree. And so with that 25% comes a lot of side effects and a lot of risks. Whereas we know that some alternatives, for instance, pain psychology, can reduce pain by a comparable amount with almost no risks, no side effects. And in fact, people are empowered to have control over their own experience.
Yeah, isn't that that's so much the key to so much in midlife or any age is to feel empowered to be CEO of the operation or whatever you're attempting to accomplish in life, including eradication of pain or whatever it is. If you feel like you're in charge and the pain's not in charge of you, then you have so much better chance of conquering the problem or at least reducing it significantly.
Well, you know, Roy, you just hit on a critically important concept that is so true, and it's a major truism in pain, is that the key to pain control is for us to really expand our toolkit, our ability to control our own experience, because what we do then is we reduce our suffering, and feeling calmer, feeling more in control is actually, in and of itself, excellent medicine for pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, opiates must be effective to some extent in easing pain, at least in the short term. Else, why would so many physicians be prescribing them? What, in fact, are the benefits of opiate pills, and should you take an opiate if your doctor prescribes one?
Yeah, that's a great question. So opioids work really well in the short run. They work well for an acute problem when they're taken very time limited. The problem is that when we take them over time, the body develops a tolerance to the medication, meaning that they work less well, that you need higher and higher doses to achieve the same effect.
Kind of like alcohol.
It's true for everyone. And tolerance is different than addiction, but the concepts can be related. But over time, people will need more medication to achieve the same effect, the same amount of pain control. Now, the problem is that opioids cause changes in the body. They reduce hormones, they reduce testosterone, they reduce estrogen, progesterone. They also disrupt sleep. And so they prevent you from reaching those deep restorative stages of sleep. So these changes, I'm just giving a couple examples, but these low hormones, this poor sleep caused by opioids, these lead to worse pain. So what's not well appreciated with opioids, people take them because they want less pain, but over time, they are associated with worse pain in many people. And so then you can see where people can easily get into a trap of, well, my pain is worse, I must need more opioid, when in fact the solution is to take less opioid. That taking less, studies show that when people slowly taper off of opioids, and I mean slowly, pain actually improves. And so that flies in the face of a lot of fears that people have in the United States that if I reduce my opioids, my pain's going to go through the roof. The research shows your pain actually improves.
Yeah, I like that term in your book. You talk about pain catastrophizing. I can't say it very well, but you anticipate a catastrophe that it's going to get worse, and so you increase the dosage, and it actually does get worse. So you kind of bring your own conclusions to fact. It's a lot like the law of attraction in reverse.
It's true. And, you know, here's why it's so sticky, is that a lot of people, maybe they tried to reduce their opioids, or maybe they just missed a dose. And, boy, their pain suddenly got worse. Well, that's because you're going into withdrawal. And so, absolutely, if you stop the medication very quickly, you're going to experience more pain. The message for people to hear is that you can very, very slowly taper down on opioids and experience less pain, less distress. And so if you've been on the opioids for years, why not take several months to slowly go down on the medication so that your body never even notices that you're reducing the dose? That's the trick.
You want to. You don't need to quit cold turkey like they always say.
It is not
with cigarettes.
Not recommended. It will be very stressful. It will be very stressful, and it's unnecessary. So work with your body. Do it comfortably. Talk to your doctor, and go very, very slow.
Well, in your book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills, you emphasize that pain is both a physical and an emotional experience. But what part do emotions play when I have a backache and the pain simply won't go away? I'm not imagining the pain, and my obvious emotion is, this hurts like hell. Will a change in my emotion help make the pain go away? And how can I change my emotions when it hurts so much?
That's a great question, Roy. So in the case, the example that you gave, your back pain, and this is true for all listeners out there, your pain is real. Your pain has a medical basis, absolutely. But this half of the definition of pain is that it's an emotional experience, meaning how we respond to the pain will either make our pain better or will make it worse. So if we are focused on our pain, how awful it is, if we're expecting it to only get worse, then that will amplify pain processing in the nervous system, in the brain, and in the spinal cord. And so we can unwittingly contribute to our pain intensity and to our suffering simply because we don't have the right skills to calm our nervous system. And that's where treating pain differently comes in. You can learn and use skills that calm your nervous system, and this serves to counteract the physical experience of pain as well as emotional suffering related to pain.
Well, in your book, you recommend that every individual who suffers from chronic pain needs to build a complete and personalized empowerment plan, as you call it, to decrease suffering naturally. Why do each of us need our own personalized plan? And how should you and I build that personal empowerment plan? Where do we get started on that?
So I recommend that everyone learn this information and these skills to best empower themselves to manage pain, to reduce your own pain, for two reasons. One, it will reduce reliance on pills and doctors, and I think everyone can get behind that. Number two, you're going to suffer less. It's going to help you gain better quality of life, and everyone wants that. Now, it's important to have a personalized plan because everybody's different. And so what I'm going to need is going to be slightly different from what you're going to need, Roy. I mean, there's key foundations. There's core skills and information that everyone needs. But the way that we apply it to ourselves in our daily lives is going to be slightly different. And so this is the information that I give in my book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills. The whole second half of the book is about pain psychology, developing your own personalized plan to best control your own symptoms, your distress, to ensure that you're treating this whole half of the definition of pain that's often neglected. In the United States, we focus on pain as being a negative sensory experience, and we throw medications at it, and we neglect the whole other half of the definition of pain as being an emotional experience, and that's where your power lies.
But for most, opiate withdrawal, like you say, is highly unpleasant, for some close to intolerable. But you have a number of recommendations as an effective method to get through withdrawal. Give us a few of those 7 tips for success. I know you mentioned one, and that's go slowly and, like small reductions every 2 weeks, that kind of thing, rather than cold turkey. But what are some of the other tips for success in that withdrawal?
Yeah, absolutely. So the goal is to completely avoid withdrawal symptoms. That's the goal. If you want to reduce opioids, you can do so comfortably and completely avoid the discomfort of withdrawal symptoms by following a plan. So number one, talk to your doctor before you get started. Most doctors are very happy to help their patients take less medication. I already mentioned go very, very slowly. That's the trick. You want to use skills during this process, skills to keep your nervous system nice and calm and relaxed. So it's not just taking away something. You also want to give yourself something. So you want to nourish that emotional part of your pain experience so that you stay calm and comfortable, because stress feeds pain. Stress grows pain. And when we experience stress, we have more pain, we're more likely to reach for a pill bottle to treat it.
Tell us to resist the temptation for trying many life changes during the tapering, like something that would create stress, obviously, if you try to change your whole, like, I'm going to start vigorous exercise right now and lose 30 pounds or whatever might be your goal.
Set yourself up for success. You don't want to start a big taper right before the holidays or a big family visit or something like that. You know, you want to start this type of a program when life is relatively calm. Timing is key.
I think it's interesting. You said some of the most significant risks for adults from taking opiates for chronic pain, that it can actually make a user more sensitive to pain. And why is it that women have a greater risk than men for chronic pain?
You know, interesting. So women are much more likely to have chronic pain than men. And some of it... the research shows that some of the reason has to do with the hormones that women have, that also there are women are more likely to have autoimmune conditions, so suggesting that there's more susceptibility to the effects of the immune system. Research shows that in many cases, women have greater pain intensity, and this can again go back to some of the hormonal aspects. So women are more likely to develop chronic pain conditions. And once they have them, they experience pain as more severe, so being more sensitive to pain. So it's more important than ever for women to learn these techniques to reduce their pain intensity, to reduce their suffering, so that they're not continually just needing more and more medication to feel better.
Yeah, I was fascinated by some of the risks that all of us have, like impaired driving or, drug-drug interactions with other drugs, and they can even affect, you mentioned your employment and your job because you're, not as sharp when you're on these opiates, and then, like you mentioned, problems sleeping. So there's all kinds of side effects that you can run into when you take these opiates, I guess.
It's true, and it's really unfortunate that in many cases, opioids were a first-line treatment for chronic pain, because there are so many other treatments with low or no risks that are equally or more effective than opioids. For instance, mindfulness-based stress reduction, cognitive behavioral therapy. The science shows that these treatments are very effective for reducing chronic pain with virtually no side effects, lots of benefits. They help reduce depression, anxiety, pain intensity, And so I have a fantasy where in the future, the first line treatment for chronic pain is these psychological empowering treatments, mindful MBSR, CBT, the skills I teach in my book, using diaphragmatic breathing to calm the nervous system. It's an antidote for pain.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about treatment options for chronic pain. Say I'm dissatisfied with the results from my family doctor. Where would you go? I mean, you talk about some great treatments, but what is a pain physician, and how do you locate a good one in your geographic area? And what is this neurostimulation you talked about in your book? If that sounds fascinating as an alternative treatment for pain.
Yeah, so most people just sort of stay with their family doctor and aren't aware that there are pain specialists, board-certified pain physicians. They're often in academic pain clinics, meaning pain clinics that are, you know, associated with a university. And so usually in those at those universities, there are pain specialists. And opioids are just one type of pain medication. There are all types. You know, I'm at the Stanford Pain Management Center, and there are over 200 medications that they prescribe for pain. And opioids are only a handful of those medications. So, for instance, opioids aren't good for neuropathic pain, but other medications are. And so pain physicians are more likely to be expert in non-opioid alternative medications, as well as some of these other treatments, like you mentioned, neurostimulation. So that is where a physician may implant a device that stimulates the spinal cord. And so it's a small electronic device. Yeah, it's actually implanted under the skin, and electrodes stimulate the spinal cord and create signals that essentially interfere with pain signaling, and this leads to pain relief. It's like, think of it like scrambling the signal, essentially.
That's great.
Yeah.
Let's knock out the cell phone signals.
It's true, but, you know, I can't emphasize enough. You know, those medications and the spinal cord stimulator, those are wonderful tools. But where I really focus, and I really want to emphasize that it's the active strategies that are so critical. It's so important for people with chronic pain to engage in to take an active role in reducing their own symptoms. And so those are self-management strategies. That's mindfulness-based stress reduction. It's learning cognitive behavioral therapy, pain psychology techniques that you use every day to help yourself feel better.
So we could potentially conquer chronic pain using the techniques in your book. I wouldn't necessarily have to go to a pain physician then.
It's true. It's true. You can certainly read, develop your own personalized plan, and optimize your own relief. It's not essential to go in one direction or the other. I do recommend absolutely that people focus on optimizing these skills to help themselves feel better. Because if you have better control over your own experience, that means you're going to need fewer visits to any doctor.
Yeah, that's so true. But if I wanted to see a pain physician, if I went on the internet and looked up, say, Google pain physician, Iowa, where I'm located, would that give me a list of doctors that I could, pain physicians that I could consult with?
Yeah, likely. Yeah, that would be a good starting point. I would definitely look for a board-certified pain physician. You can also go to the website of the American Academy of Pain Medicine and do a provider search on their website as well. In looking for a pain psychologist, you can go to Psychology Today website and do a search for a mental health therapist who has some expertise in treating chronic pain. All psychologists are not created equal. You really want to work with a psychologist or a mental health professional who has training and skill in treating chronic pain so that they can help you learn those specific skills to help yourself feel better.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about your book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills. You mentioned your book is organized in two sections. The first section, what, you talk about the risks of opioids, and then the second section, you go into the detailed recommendations for developing your own personalized plan for treatment. Is that how it's set up?
That's exactly right. Yeah, the first half of the book is opioid education. And so, you know, some people will remain on opioids. My goal in writing this book was to give people the information they need to make an informed decision about opioids. What I found over the years in working with people with chronic pain is they almost felt like they were in a gotcha situation.
Yeah.
Like their doctor put them on the medication, and then 3 years later, they're like, what am I on? I'm in a mess. And I'm just taking them as prescribed, and nobody told me about this.
Yeah,
and
you just get prescribed by your doctor, so you take them without really understanding their benefits and what the potential risk is. And what
that's right. That's right. And they were just angry and indignant. And I felt like this has got to stop. People need to know what they're getting into. And then they can make an informed choice. And then also, the second half of the book, focusing on pain psychology skills, they can also, whether you take medication or not, regardless, you want to use these skills so that you have the most control over your experience, so that you're going to need less of the medication, any medication for pain. And
Amen.
So, right? I mean, that's really the goal. We all want the best quality of life with, you know, the least amount of medication.
Yeah.
And that is the goal. So the second half of the book, I give people the information they need to develop their own personalized pain management plan, focusing on acquiring these key skills that calm the nervous system, that counteract pain. Now, it's not something you do once. This is a lifelong plan. This is something you use regularly to calm your nervous system. So you want to use these skills. You want to think of them as mind-body medicine, right? So every time you use the skills, you're dosing your mind-body medicine to calm your nervous system, and that dampens pain processing in the brain and in the spinal cord.
Yeah, it's not just a one-time quick fix for pain, obviously. It's something you want to adopt for your entire lifelong process of any time that you have emotional pain or suffer from physical pain, that's the time that you want to use these techniques, I guess. But,
yeah, it's the regular use that gets people the results. So, you know, an analogy I give is like, imagine that you have depression and you go to your doctor and your doctor prescribes you an antidepressant.
Yeah.
You don't take one pill and then say, well, I'm still depressed, it didn't work. We know that it takes 4 to 6 weeks of medication to build in the system for it to really become effective. Mind-body skills work the same way. They build over time in your system. And so I say give it a solid 4 to 6 weeks, regular use, daily use, and then you'll really start to understand how powerful these techniques can be. The science supports it. We do we do studies at Stanford and other universities where we do functional magnetic resonance imaging of the brain and the spinal cord. We're able to see how effective these skills are at changing the brain patterns and leveraging a person away from pain. So you want to remember that and use them regularly. You really are dosing mind-body medicine.
Well, where should we go to preview and purchase your book? What's the best bet?
You can find, thanks, Roy. You can find Less Pain, Fewer Pills on Amazon. And I also invite people to visit my website, BethDarnell.com. I have articles, I have videos, lots of information about pain, lots of links to empowering information about how people can best gain control over their experience to reduce pain.
BethDarnell.com, just so people know.
Yeah. BethDarnell.com, and almost no matter how you spell it, there's a redirect that will get you to the right place.
I like those redirects because I'm not
right?
a very good speller.
Making it easy.
In conclusion, over the past 2 or 3 months, we've had several programs dedicated to chronic pain, and it's certainly not a pleasant subject. But if you're one of the 100 million Americans who suffer, it may be the most important subject on your mind. And I'm certain our guest, Beth Darnell, Ph.D., would agree with two conclusions. First of all, extended use of opiate prescription drugs is your only solution for chronic pain. Not only probably won't work, it actually may make the problem worse. And like Prince, you could even end up dead from an overdose. And like many other problems and challenges in our lives, chronic pain requires a holistic solution, and it requires you to take charge, combining physical action with mental thoughts and emotions, and you're the person in charge. And third and most important, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, as she describes in her book, Real Pain Relief, along with successful tapering off of potentially dangerous opioid drugs is a possibility. And if you or a loved one have had it with chronic pain, I would highly recommend Beth Darnell's book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills, and the full title of that is what again? I always get this last part.
Less Pain, Fewer Pills, Avoid the Dangers of Prescription Opioids and Gain Control Over Chronic Pain.
Okay, that's good. I had it written out, but I always seem to misplace the description. And thank you so much, Beth Darnell, and you've certainly opened my eyes to pain, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners as well. And there is that light at the end of the tunnel, so let's all go out and find it. Thanks so much, Beth.
Roy, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Well, here's one to ponder. Not middle age can be your best age, but your age today at this very moment can be your best age. You know, the past is gone. You can't change that. No regret, simply a guide to the future. You can always and always should envision and plan for a happy and prosperous tomorrow, but don't sacrifice joyful and purposeful living today for a tomorrow that may never arrive. You can't enjoy life on dreams alone. And here's a worthy goal. Enjoy every aspect of today. A vocation where someone else compensates you to have a good time. A marriage or romantic relationship where each of you sacrifices for the other and both of you are fulfilled. And frequent times out from work and from the rigors of daily living to enjoy your offspring at the very age they are now. You know, they'll never be that age again. And to guide their futures. And don't forget to have fun along the way with a hobby or recreation, whatever you like to do. Regarding your career, here's an idea. Search for a vocation in a sweet spot where three circles intersect. Those circles are your gifts, your talents in life, your passions, what you really like to do, and the world's greatest needs. Well, maybe not the whole world, but you must be sure to be serving the needs of someone, the needs, ambitions, or desires of others. Obviously, you've got to give something to somebody else to earn a living. Maybe selling them a house, maybe healing their illness if you're a doctor, transporting them to where they want to go if you're a taxi driver. There's all kinds of ways you can serve others in a manner that you enjoy doing. And here's an idea. Define your life's purpose, then seek to accomplish that purpose through a series of jobs, each one getting closer to that purpose. That's kind of a unique idea, isn't it? Well, personally, I didn't follow that advice. I had very few jobs I truly enjoyed and which brought out my best. for 30 years. It seems like I was continually striving to preserve what I had when I didn't particularly like what I had. On a future program, I'll talk about a 30-day mental vacation, and you don't have to stop working to perform it. A key to this mental vacation, if possible, successfully perform your present job functions while your mind is on vacation, where stress is definitely dismissed. And if unemployed, take time out to do this mental vacation first before you start madly searching for a new job. And don't try to take the mental vacation in a super busy time of the year at work. Tax accountants, for instance, shouldn't plan a mental vacation 30 days before April 15th. But once you define your ideal job, ask how your present job fits, how it could be modified to fit that ideal, and then ask your boss for enhancements and new responsibilities, things you're good at, and maybe you can make that job fit a lot closer to your ideal. And, you know, journalizing each day's plus or minus at work is a great initiative toward finding that true calling. The key to mid-career job search, you are marketing yourself as a profit-generating asset, not just looking for a job. Always keep that in mind. Now let's turn to relationships, and I hope they're great with your spouse, your kids, your boss, your friends and co-workers, but maybe you're having some rough spots in your marriage, in your parenting, at work. Well, guess what? The first place to start in improving those relationships is with you. Now, how is your general attitude and outlook? Remember my guest last week, Dr. Deanna Minnick, recommended a whole detox, and that's a personalized program for cleansing out not just the toxins in your system, but stress, fear, and negative emotions as well. And once you clear out stress and fear, you can start thinking about the positive aspects of yourself, all you have to offer, the many talents and what you really enjoy doing, what you love to do the most, and what you are seeking in your relationships, and what you are willing to give in return. And guess what? Once you're 100% confident in who you are and what you want and what you provide, then ask yourself how you can give to others and obtain love and support in return. Your relationship problems may not clear up overnight, and there may need to be some separation from some individuals, from those who just aren't right for the positive you. But any splits can be a loving manner and mutually positive. And believe me, once you're detoxed and feel good about yourself all the time, 90% of your relationship problems will go away. I can say that personally because it certainly happened with me. And remember, if you don't know where to start, you can always take Dr. Minnick's self-scoring whole detox spectrum quiz, as she mentioned last week about that. See for yourself what areas of life you need to work on. And you can take that quiz for free. Go to whole-detox.com. That's Dr. Minnick's worksheet. Of course, you can buy her book, Whole Detox, as well. Also, you can preview my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. We offer similar self-rating where you can determine just where you are today, plus a comprehensive roadmap to renew that person and be the person you were created to be. And you can review and purchase my book on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or on our website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com. And believe me, once you change your attitude, today, every day, can and will be your best age. And that's it for our program today. Tune in next week when we'll interview The Little House on the Prairie. Remember that show from the 70s? There was a beloved school teacher named Miss Beadle, and we will interview Miss Beadle's real-life counterpart, the actress Charlotte Stewart, and you'll discover what her real life was like, and it was not so idyllic. You won't want to miss it. So tune in next week for Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com.